Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, nothing happened this week. Very quiet.
Yeah.
Very quiet week for the Lions.
Yeah, just, you know, everything has been reported, situations like, you know, they're focusing on the draft or they're scouting these guys, and it's really been a quiet week as far as changes to the roster. But, you know, there's information out there to be had. You just kind of have to find it. Like, for example, at Lions Wire, Scott Warhite wrote a roster reset to kind of get everybody familiar with where they're at with the roster. Jeff Risden reset the needs for the Lions, and so there's still information coming out. It's just there's not. It's definitely quieter than the past couple weeks have been.
All right, and I guess one official piece of news: TJ Lang is retired. Although everybody knew he was retiring.
Yeah. He said goodbye on Friday.
All right, and then also saying goodbye was Eli Harold.
Yeah,
it's a little surprising, slightly surprising.
Yeah, you know, if you follow him on social media, like a lot of us do, follow the players, he's been hinting at this for a while, and then eventually he just said a goodbye. I was a bit surprised that they didn't go after him. Could be a money thing. Could be he thought his value was higher than an offer that they gave him, or maybe they didn't give him an offer. Maybe they had their sights set on another direction.
And finally, Luke Wilson, his dream of playing for his hometown team, has ended because he signed with the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, and he joins Nevin Lawson, who's also with the Raiders. And he didn't play with Tahir, but Tahir Whitehead is also on the Raiders as well. So,
and may also be on Hard Knocks this year.
It's interesting. The Lions commented on that this week, saying they still don't want to be on it, but if they are, they'll
suck it up and do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're ready for it if they need to.
I don't know. What does anybody glean off of Hard Knocks? Why are they so against being on Hard Knocks? I guess we gleaned that Jeff Fisher was nearing the end of his coaching his coaching life,
uh-huh.
And that Dirk Cutter did have a bunch of things, you know, playbooks,
mm-hmm.
the rosters, TV screens, but it didn't really make a big difference.
Well, and Risden kind of alluded to that. He wrote an article on this again, this topic here, and he said, because remember, he covers Cleveland Browns. Browns were on Hard Knocks last year.
Yeah.
And he said that one of the things, the main takeaways you could get from it were you could see how Baker Mayfield had integrated himself in, and how the fans were already taken to him, and how the staff was taken to him very, very early, and you could kind of see the writing on the wall that he was going to be the starter eventually, which worked out real well for them. And then also, he just talked about how it was neat to learn some backstories on some other players, and you could see some tension behind the defensive coordinator and the coach, and the coach got fired, and right, so it's like you could kind of see some of that coming, but realistically, it's not like, you know, world breaking news or anything like that. It's a neat inside, you know, behind the curtain look there.
It would be interesting if the Lions are selected to be on the show.
Oh yeah,
if we try to figure out beforehand what's going to happen, like what tension are we going to learn about. How are they going to portray the fans of the team? Like, you know, as angry or sad sack or oddly optimistic or whatever.
I think they would make them, I think there would be a combination between sad and then optimistic. Because I think based on the training camp rules and how training camp works in Detroit, it's not as
they keep the negative out.
Well, but there's not as many fans as there are in some other bases. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, they could easily kind of draw on that if they wanted to.
Maybe they'll go all-out circus this year, if they're going to be on TV anyways.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Then they can placate some of the fans by saying, you know what, we're going to have a lot more people out this year while HBO's filming, because, hey, they're already doing it anyways.
It would be fascinating, that's for sure.
All right, Let's move on to the roster outlook.
Mm-hmm.
First question from Jovan Willis. Compared to the rest of the NFC North, do you think the Lions made the most gains? Have they put themselves in position as the dark horse to take the North? Oh, okay. Interesting second part of the question.
Oh, as far as the most gains, I would say yes. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, one, they finished last, so they had the most moves to make. And then, two, they had the most money. And so while the Bears got a little bit worse, the Vikings got a little bit worse, the Packers got a little bit better, the Lions are the ones who made the most adjustments and added the most amount of talent right now, and they're picking high in the draft, which is also going to add to this as well. So I don't know if that necessarily makes them a dark horse, but, I mean, to go from last to competitive would definitely be, I guess you'd call it a dark horse.
Well, I don't know. See, that's the one thing that caught me is dark horse. I don't think they could be dark horse because who's the prohibitive favorite? Because it should be the Bears because they won the division last year.
Yeah, but
a lot of people might be seeing the sophomore slump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're two after the year of no expectations turned big. Now there's big expectations, mm-hmm. and there's the disastrous playoff game and. The Vikings, you know, they're a mess because they decided to go with Kirk Cousins, sadly, you know, sadly to admit that. And, yeah, the Packers did make some modest gains by adding the Smiths, on the defensive ends or the edge rushers. But it doesn't really make the Lions a dark horse because who's the favorite in this division? You know, mm-hmm. like, if they happened to win it, well, they just happened to win it. They were the team that was there at the time.
Right. I think in the division, the days of the Packers dominating it are gone. Right?
Famous last words.
Well, no, but
they
but
might have said that in the 1960s, at the end of the 60s. But and they were for 20 years, so you do have a good point.
But the Bears won it last year, the Vikings won it the year before, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the Packers have had to make some adjustments to where I think they recognize. And they are making moves that are smart. And you can see them changing, but I think, you know, they're not going to be the foregone favorite anymore, which has always been in the past. And so I think it'll be a competitive, but it's going to be a little bit more evenly matched division this year. I think when it's all said and done in the off season is complete.
All right, Blake Berry and Milk and French Fries have the same question: could the Lions go into the season with their current offensive line?
They could. But I would only feel comfortable if it was because Crosby had shifted inside to start at right guard. We know, it was reported this week, that they are giving Crosby snaps inside, and their plan is to test him out this offseason and see what he can do and allow him to compete. But if he is not competing or you don't think he's good enough to compete, then I would say no, they're not done. I don't think they're comfortable with Wiggins and Abushe being your right guard competition. I think one of those guys might make the roster as a backup, but I don't think they're, unless it's Crosby, I think they'll add.
All right, Frank Ribble asks, how important is it in Bevel's offense to have a tight end that is an offensive weapon? How many tight ends will the Lions carry on their roster?
Well, Bevel's done it two ways. Right, he's done it where the tight end hasn't been as insignificant, and then when they added Jimmy Graham, he made it so the tight end was very significant, second most. But it really just the blocking aspect of the tight end has always been something that they've utilized because he's been a run first or run priority, I guess, type of offensive play caller. So the tight end has been very important. I think that's one of the reasons why they went out after Jesse James is because they needed a guy who could be reliable, who can block, who they can put out there in multiple situations, and that's significant. Now, adding that F tight end or that move tight end, that is where things get a little bit tricky. I think they definitely could and replicate that Jimmy Graham type scenario, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they went an alternate route, added a middle of the road tight end or a potential type tight end, and then added a big time slot or inside outside type receiver, because there's a very obvious need to add another pass catcher. It's just a matter of which way they choose to attack it.
All right, how many will they have in the roster? Right now, there's four.
Yeah, and it could go one of two ways. It's either going to be three or four. It's right. possible that you have a situation where Logan Thomas becomes Hakeem Velez and they keep a fourth guy. But if they – it'll really depend on how the draft shakes out. If they draft a guy, they could keep four. If they draft a tight end and a receiver, then it might be just three.
All right, Joey Two Times asks, is Zach Zenner a running back two or running back three?
I know there's a lot of people that really like Zenner, but he is third on my depth chart.
But he'll end up starting at least once this season.
Well, it's possible. It all depends on who they add to be that number two behind Kerryon. But Zenner is would be my third, and Riddick is more of your specialist, so I'm not going to count him in this hierarchy here.
No, I've gotten trouble saying this before with Bo Nunn, famously. But Zenner... Yeah. Did Zach Zenner make the 53-man roster last season?
No, because he was hurt.
How many games did he start at running back?
Oh, none.
No, one. 21 carries for 93 yards against the Packers in week 17. Right.
Yep.
All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that Blunt was just not what we expected him to be. But yeah.
The same thing can happen with running back X that they add, or Theo Riddick could be, whatever.
I still think it's still possible to add one in free agency and the draft.
All right, Night Train Lane. Trey Williams, an under-the-radar signing. Can you expand our knowledge? He's listed as an outside linebacker on our lads and in the NCAA as an inside linebacker. Your old college weight is low, 238 pounds now at Auburn. He was 225. Any weight update? If JD is injured, Jared Davis, could he be the middle linebacker?
Okay, so to understand how he fits, we need to just make sure we clarify how the linebackers are used in this scheme. The Mike linebacker is the middle, and that's Jared Davis. And then the Will linebacker is technically like an outside linebacker like you would find on our lads. But in the scheme, the Will linebacker is more like an inside Will. The inside Will is kind of like a Mike linebacker in that it lines up behind the line of scrimmage and not outside of the tackle box. So it has similar characteristics. With Williams, I have him slotted as a Will linebacker, which is, again, same characteristic traits as a Mike linebacker, but because he's only like 238 pounds, which is where I have him listed at, he's more suited to that Will than necessarily inside at the Mike. If Davis was hurt, though, Longo would be the guy that would back him up. That's how it was squaring out away last year before Longo hurt himself in the preseason finale. Williams right now would be behind Christian Jones, behind Jalen Reeves-Maybin. He's kind of a light your hair on fire and likes to hit people, more of a special teamer. I think right now he would be fifth amongst the linebacker group. So he'd have a way to go before he would get a shot at seeing regular reps.
All right, I'm going to move away from the roster outlook. We'll look at trades. Steven Misilowski and Ben C. and Derek have a pile of questions that we've mixed together. First one is, it's rumored the Texans are shopping Jadeveon Clowney. Is it true the Lions are pursuing him? I'm guessing it's false.
It is false. And I hadn't heard anything myself. I reached out and I was told no. Then I asked Jeff Risden, and Risden also checked with his sources, and he also said the same thing, emphatically, no. It's not part of the rumor mill. I think Trey Flowers kind of should have killed those rumors, or maybe those rumors are still out there. But he essentially is what Trey Flowers is here. It would change the dynamic, because you're not really going to use him as an off-the-ball line, like a jack or anything like that. It would be a tough spot and it would be a very difficult price tag. So, no, they're not pursuing him.
Would you be on board with the Lions giving up number 8 for Clowney?
No.
What about Clowney and the Texans' second round pick, which is number 55?
Now it gets a little bit more entertaining when you start asking that. But I'm with you. But I still wouldn't.
What's left? Isn't it 1 year left in this contract?
He's franchised.
Yeah, so it's a 1 year deal. No. Yeah. What would you be willing to give up?
You'd have to have a long term deal in place before the trade. I wouldn't give up that 8 spot. I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of what I would do. I unfortunately, like I said, it's a non-issue, so I'm not even sure what I would do.
All right, Night Train Lane comes back again with another question. What would be the likely haul to trade back 2 to 12 picks in the first round? Assuming we were lucky enough to be offered, I recollect that approximately 50% of first and third round picks are traded at some point pre-draft or during draft day.
Really?
It's not that high.
It's pretty high.
It's not that high. It's significant, but it's not half. But yeah, I mean, and it's becoming more trendy to trade them nowadays. But to get back to the first part.
Makes it look like you're hustling.
What would you get? Well, yeah, I mean, what would you get for trading back two spots? So let's say you trade back two spots to 10, you'd probably get
Denver's pick.
Yeah, you'd probably get like a third round pick. Maybe probably like a late third round pick, to be honest. If you went back to 11, it increases the value of that third round pick.
To a middle third round pick.
Yeah.
In fact, the pick the Lions have in the third round, 88.
Yeah,
it's worth 150 points according to the Jimmy Johnson point scale.
Same thing with 12; it's middle of the round. 13; it's now you're talking. You want an early third round pick to go to 14, late second, early third to go to 15. Now you're in the second round range for sure. And for to go to 16, you're getting middle of the round again. And that for that second round to go to 17, you're basically asking for pick 43, which is essentially what the Lions have. So if you're dropping back nine spots, you're asking for a very high second-round pick.
Now you get three of the top 44.
Yeah, and if you drop back between like 18 and 20, it should be an even higher second-round pick. I don't think the Lions. The only way the Lions are going to get like a second first-round pick is if they would trade with the Raiders. If you're trading all the way back into like the 20s, right? So. You know, you're looking at what do we talk about? We talked about this scenario before. The Raiders have pick 24 and pick 27. Like then the value starts to eke out a little bit more. But going back from 8 to 26, 27, that makes sense. But you got to be picking in the 20s if you want to get a second one there. So it gives you a rough estimate of kind of how it breaks down. And there's always little tricks and trades. Like if a team like Denver doesn't have, let's say Denver wants to move up to get a quarterback, but they don't have a late third round pick. What they would do is they would say, okay, here's our, you know, third round pick, but you got to give us something back to make up the difference. Or here's a fourth round pick plus maybe a third rounder next year or something like that in order to sweeten the pot. That's how you kind of, how it kind of washes out that way.
You know, I was asked the other day about the Jimmy Johnson point value of draft picks.
Yeah.
Is it still used? Is there something different now? Because you think it would change over 25 years.
So if you look at my chart.
I'm looking at the chart. This is not the Jimmy Johnson chart.
The Jimmy Johnson chart starts, the first pick is worth 3,000 points.
Mm-hmm.
And then the number inside of that, the first pick is worth 100 points. So that's a different scale. That's a more modern scale that
100 point scale.
Yeah, and then they drop it down accordingly. See how Jimmy always drops things down by like 400 points, 50, and then when you get into the tens, you're dropping it like 50 points a pick. But with this one, it scales it from 1 to 100, makes it a little easier to wash, and actually levels it out a little bit better. So there's a couple different versions that are out there. I keep the Jimmy one because it's historical. But that 101 is the one that I usually reference more often than not.
All right. That's enough for trades. Let's talk about the NFL draft. Rich Koenigsnecht, he asked to rank the draft needs, edge rusher, tight end, cornerback, interior offensive line.
I mean, when you look at the roster, there's an argument to be made for tight end, corner, or offensive line, right? Each of them could be upgraded quite a bit. And with Melvin, it softens the blow at corner. If they want to use two tight ends, then that becomes a higher need. But if they're choosing to go receiver as opposed to a second big-time tight end, then that softens that need. So it really depends on what their approach is. The one clear option is right guard. But again, as we talked earlier, if you move Crosby inside, then that's going to throw off. Then that makes that less of a need. So it's really hard to ascertain which of those is a priority right now because there's so many alternatives that they can do. Edge is probably the least priority of those 3, because those are the 3 obvious holes, but it's still something that you need to do because that was a weak spot on the defense overall, finding a way to get that pressure. So it's really hard to tell, you know, to put these in a 1-2-3-4 order because there's so many alternatives. And I think that's what the Lions really like, is they want to have that those options to be able to make moves and not be locked into saying, we got to get a corner no matter what in the first round, even and you don't want to get locked in like that. So I think this is all part of the plan, that there's some ambiguity amongst which is the priority.
Greg Warren, Jacob Bauman, and Justin Fendelt have similar questions. They all had questions around the ranking of the Lions' top picks in the first round.
Yeah, each of these guys sent in a question that was like, do you like this guy over this guy, or if these guys are there? And so I tried to just summarize it, and I figured we'd just look at how I'm looking at the top of the draft right now, and this should hopefully answer all of their questions. So basically for me, there's a tier one. And that tier one is players that, if they're there, you take them, right? If they are, if they are available, there's not really a good trade scenario that I could think that would be better than the value of the player. Okay, so this tier one are guys I take regardless. If one of them is there, I'm going to the podium and I'm saying, let's give me this guy, make my team better, right? So my number one player is Quinnen Williams. I think he's the best player in the draft. I understand it's not a need, an immediate, like a glazing need at as an interior defensive lineman, but he is freakish, and he would be insurance for when Damon Harrison either retires or if his
production curtails,
or yeah, exactly, or they don't give him an extension, he can also be insurance against Ajaan Robinson. Now they do have Hand, of course, but he can also intermix and switch around. Now, you know, people get caught up on who's the starter, and we've talked about this before. The defensive linemen, they usually play like 60% of the time. They're not playing 100 snaps, and so to add a guy like this, you're keeping everybody fresh all the time. And it makes your team better. He's a better pass rusher than Ajaan. He's a better run stuffer than Ajaan. He would bump Ajaan out of the starting lineup immediately. But he can just do so much along that defensive line that you could put him at really anywhere, and he's going to work. So you can't pass on a talent that's that good. Quinnen Williams, number one with a bullet for me. Number two is Josh Allen. And I know a lot of people are going to say, isn't Bosa better? Look, Bosa's great, but to me, Allen is a much better fit. I think they're close enough from a player standpoint that there's room for argument. And for me, the fit is just so much better that it separates the two easily for me. Allen would come in. You could play him at Jack. You could play him at Will linebacker. That's having a guy that can do those types of things is very rare. He's going to give you pass rushing prowess. He's going to be a good edge setter. His versatility is really unmatched in the type of guy. It's think of like the impact that that Von Miller had in Denver. He has that type of potential where he can just change everything around him because of his flexibility and versatility. After that, it would be Bosa. Bosa's my number three. Ideally, he would play in that Trey Flowers role, but with Flowers there, you would still find a different way to use him. Maybe you end up using more 4 defensive lineman type of situation. There's a lot of different ways you can get him worked in. Again, he's a good talent. He just doesn't have as much range as Allen, so he comes in third here for me. And then the last one is Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver was used out of position. He had a incredible workout where his Quib scores. He was a full qualifier at Quib for nose tackle, full qualifier at Quib for the defensive tackle 3 technique. He was a full qualifier for defensive end. He was a full qualifier at the Jack position. He was a full qualifier at the off the ball linebacker position.
Wow,
he is as impressive of
off
an athlete,
the charts.
It's everywhere. He's a 5 full qualifier. And it's so rare to have a guy who can do all five of those things. Now, he could learn off the ball linebacker, but at 280, you're probably not going to do it. Maybe you drop
Levon
him.
Levon Kirkland played heavier than that
as a
middle linebacker.
Let's say you drop him down into the 270s to give him a little bit even more positional range. There's a lot you can do with him. For me, I take him. I slot him in either at that three technique, but I'm also shifting him out at defensive end. I'm also putting him at jack. He's going to do all kinds of things. I don't pass on Oliver. There's an argument for me that you could put Oliver over Bosa. But for right now, I think I'm going to leave it the way it is with Bosa at 3 and Oliver at 4. But if any of those guys are there, I can't pass on them. Not at all. When you get into Tier 2, this is when things get a little bit trickier.
Now you can pass on him and trade your pick to Denver who wants a quarterback.
Exactly. Now you can say, okay, I can get another guy that's like you, but I can still find other value. And if the options are there, let's see what's up. Right now, top of the list for me is Brian Burns out of Florida State. Burns is just, he's another guy who I think has that Josh Allen type range where he can play in a lot of different spots. He's not going to be an off-the-ball linebacker like Allen can be, but he can play down and he can stand and he can add that pass rushing element that they're really missing. The potential's there, the ceiling's there. I like what you can get out of Brian Burns. Then it gets a little tricky. For me, Sweat is not next on my board, okay? I think Montez Sweat is a down defensive lineman who would have to really, really learn how to play the jack position, and I don't think he's got the body for it. I don't think he has the bend for it, even though from an athletic standpoint, it looks like he does, but he hasn't shown the ability. For me, he's not next. For the Lions, I believe he would be next. I think Sweat would be next in that category. But for me, I would put him a little bit further down. I would actually have Rashawn Gary next. And I know people are going to get mad at me about this and they think I'm crazy. But Gary fits this system exactly like Trey Flowers does. He can be an outside guy. He can be an inside guy. He has a lot of range. His ceiling is just off the chart. So I don't think there's a tailor-made fit for him, but I think his talent is there. And if he's at 8, he has to really be considered. So for me, on my personal board, those next three guys make a nice clump, and that takes us to 7. So if those 7 guys are gone, though,
we're done, it's over.
They probably won't.
They go 1 through 7, we're done.
Well, then, I mean,
we'll just leave.
Well, then we can trade out for Kyler, someone who wants Kyler Murray, because we've got to remember, Kyler Murray is going to be in there. There's going to be a team that might want an offensive tackle. There's going to be a team that might want a linebacker.
Dwayne Haskins.
And that could, right? And that could bump some of these other top guys down. So I don't think we really need to get past these 7, but if you do, then now the debate starts, okay, well, who's the next highest guy on the board? This is a good interior defensive line. You know, maybe they look back at Christian Wilkins, who has talent galore, and he can play both spots on the interior line, and he's a high character guy that has tested off the charts. Maybe it's Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State, who has drawn Ndamukong Suh comparisons, but he has that one off-the-field incident from back when he was in high school that has caused pause amongst people. These two guys are probably could end up being top 10 talent, but they're, again, the fit isn't a perfect marriage, but those guys, from a talent perspective, are probably in that mix. I know a lot of people like Devin White. I like Devin Bush. There's some debate over that. We've talked in the past about how that Will linebacker is not a 100% player, how he only plays 3/4 of the snaps. So for me, that's a little bit down lower on the pecking order. But if they want a linebacker, maybe Bush is up there near the top. And we haven't even looked at the offensive side of the ball yet, where you have, do you like Hockenson or do you like Fant? Do you like Jonah Williams or Cody Ford or Andre Dillard or even Taylor from the kid from Florida, the right tackle, Juwan Taylor from Florida? Each one of those guys, depending on whose list you look at, those four tackles each sit as the number one tackle on different guys' boards. I think Jonah Williams is the top guy on Brugler's board. I think he's also the top guy on Lanzierlein's board. But then Juwan Taylor is the guy on top of the Draft Network's board. So there's different guys that are fit higher at different spots, and you know, maybe some of them are you know, the Lions might like in one situation or another. For me, I like Cody Ford if they're going to look for a guy who can play an instant plug and play at right guard, and he's not the top guy on anybody's board right now, I don't think, but he could be a guy that goes because he's a neat Andreas Pete type of
neat
talent, right? You know, there's a lot of debate on which way they could go after those kind of top seven for me. And so there's not anything that's really clear right now. And so right now for me, I got four guys. I want one of those four pretty bad. And if it's not one of those four, I'm open to a lot of different interpretations on which direction the team could head.
All right, Glenn. Oh, we just finished Glenn's question. Now we're on to D. Hargis.
Actually, no, we didn't.
We did talk a lot about it. All right, Glenn P., his question, which you've already answered. Oh, okay. I know you're a massive fan of Ed Oliver,
yes,
and think he can play on the edge in Matt Patricia's scheme. What gives you confidence that he could be a high-level player in the scheme on the edge and not be hindered by his lack of length?
Yeah, sorry. I guess I did address a lot of these questions, but I'll address the length thing right now. From a length standpoint,
he has small hands,
and his arm length is just a tick under 32. Typically, you look for
34.
Typically, 34 is the inside guy's arms. But again, if you're going to shift him out on the edge more, now you're looking at 33 as more of a target. Again, he's still significantly lower than that. But what makes him unique is that he's lower to the ground. And because he's lower to the ground and he has that elite get off, he can manipulate people in a different way. He doesn't need to use his arms to reach out. He gets under arms. And when he gets underneath guys' arms, he can leverage them. And so while for a lot of these interior and edge guys, you want that length, you can also win in different ways if you don't have it, right? So like, Josh Allen has over 33, Nick Bosa over 33, Burns over 33, Gary over 34, Montez Sweat over 35, which is ridiculous, almost 36. Mm-hmm. Those are all great. For Oliver, he's going to win very different than they do. And he's going to win with quickness, power, and leverage. And that's, I think, what mitigates those concerns on arm length for me.
All right, D. Hargis's question. With the rumors of a trade back with Atlanta, who are the current holders of the number 14 pick, would you be willing to trade back if you got a second and a fourth, or stand pat and take Oliver if available?
So the rumor was that Atlanta is very interested in Oliver, and they were targeting the Lions because that's where they think Oliver would fall to. If Oliver's there,
you would not trade?
Not even a little bit. But if Oliver's not there and they've got a different guy that they liked, now I'm open. Now I'm open to these trade downs. And if it's a second trading down just to 14, well, look, we just talked about the fact that trading down the 14 is a late second value. So, yeah, I'd be very interested in that, you know, if the offer's there. But I wouldn't do it at the expense of Ed Oliver, that's for sure.
All right, Jacob Dusher. What do you think about the Lions drafting Devin White at 8 and moving Davis to the outside?
So White and Davis are basically the same player. This has kind of been my stance for a while, is that they win in the same ways, they lose in the same ways, they're exposed in the same ways. And for me, I wouldn't draft him at 8 because you're putting two guys that can be exposed in the same ways and at that second level. But if they did take him, I still think he would play outside more. Adjusting to the inside, there's a lot more than just playing the middle. You got to make the calls, you got to make the adjustments, and Davis has now 3 years, right, of doing this. And so, this will be his third year.
This will be his third year.
Yeah, and so that experience, you got to remember how it took him 10 games before he got comfortable in the middle, and the expectations would be pretty similar. If you put Devin White in the middle, there's going to be mistakes made, and it's going to take him, you know, the majority of a season before he would get comfortable there. I think you can get hit, if you did add a linebacker, you could get them comfortable in other ways as a rookie, but I would be utilizing them at will.
All right. L. Decker's question, what is the major difference between Devin's, White and Bush, and which one fits the Lions' scheme better?
Yeah, from an athletic standpoint, they're almost identical.
Yeah, they're close.
They match up almost in height and weight and arm length and, I mean, across the board, they're almost identical.
Same speed.
Yeah, it's crazy. The explosion scores are almost identical within a half a point. The difference, though, I mean, because both of them are extraordinarily talented, the difference, though, is again, in how they win. Devin White is a guy who is going to win with athleticism and range. He can cover, he can explode, but he has trouble reading gaps. With Devin Bush, he also has that sideline and sideline range. He's a little bit better as a cover guy. He understands how to blow up and diagnose screens, run plays. There's a lot more that he can do, and I think he is a his skill set and ability to read gaps is what makes him a more perfect complement to Jared Davis as opposed to White, who's too similar. Bush, there's some injury concerns that could go along with it with him. He's also under 6 foot, and it's just we're talking eighths of an inch here, but you know, there's thresholds that these GMs have, and he doesn't quite hit it. But for me, if you're telling me I'm picking an off the ball linebacker to put in this Lions defense, I'm taking Devin Bush.
All right, BZ Ski asks Eric, two sleeper linebackers I've been looking at are Ty Summers from TCU and Andrew Van Grinkle from Wisconsin. Both have tested and ran well, but for some reason are under the radar. Any thoughts on them as far as the quib goes?
Yeah, they're both full quib guys. Summers is more of an off the ball, whereas Van Winkle is more of an edge guy. They have a lot of athletic ability, but there's flaws in their games. You know, there's a handful of guys like this at the linebacker position. This is a very athletic linebacker group as a whole. But they lack that, I don't want to say athleticism because it's not that. They're much, like I said, faster and agile, but they just don't have like the instincts or the production that you've seen from some of these other guys. There are some very interesting names. Summers is an interesting name, and you know, weighing in at 240, that helps. But then there's guys like Amiki Ajibuli, who played that kind of off-the-ball Sam linebacker, Jack linebacker at Houston with Ed Oliver.
More teammates of Ed Oliver's right? To room with.
He's a guy who his range is all over the place, everywhere from third round to seventh round. He's a guy that I think would also intrigue, just like Van Grinkle, he can play that kind of edge role, but he can also drop. All the Wisconsin guys can really do that. That's one of the traits of that Wisconsin defense is they fit, their linebackers translate well into this scheme. But then, like I said, there's other guys that do this as well. If you're looking for a strictly off-the-ball guy to compete with Christian Jones, Blake Cashman from Minnesota, has some like Eric Kendricks type upside. We haven't talked about Mac Wilson, who has really been kind of left behind by the Devins. But there's a handful of guys out there that they could bring in on day three and compete for a role player, a role spot behind Christian Jones. Maybe they can push him, or maybe just fill out some more depth there.
All right, Brandon Kerr. In talking to Jeff Risden and Scott Bischoff, they consider taking a wide receiver in the second round more of a need than cornerback. Problem is there are a lot of good cornerbacks right in that area, and they will miss one if they take a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Do you feel the same way? Can the Lions get by with Melvin at cornerback 2 this year as a starter?
They can. we've talked about this a little bit in the past. If you utilize Justin Coleman like you utilize Nevin Lawson as your number two corner who plays outside in two cornerback sets and inside in three cornerback sets, you can then utilize a guy who's not an every down player on the outside, and you have options with Melvin. You have options with Mike Ford, who's in my opinion an ascending player, and so you can get away with that if you want to. You could also get away with not taking a receiver if you're targeting a move tight end that's one of the top guys. But the reverse is true as well. Like with what Bischoff and Risen are saying here is that if you get a receiver, that softens the need at that tight end spot. And while it does limit your opportunities for adding a corner, you know, Melvin is capable of filling in, and then we can see what happens with the other guys as well. Just really depends on where you want to get that pass catcher. And if you want to get that pass catcher at receiver, the second round is a really good spot. There's going to be a lot of different talent. And, you know, guys like A.J. Brown, Debo Samuel, those are guys that are high on my board that I think would fit in real well with what the Lions are looking for.
Night Train Lane finds his way back into the questions, and he asks, as far as Irv Smith as a possible second-round pick is concerned, is there historical data to support a short, 6'3", blocker, and to a greater extent, above-average receiving tight end being deserving of an early second-round pick?
I mean, he wins with his receiving, right? And he doesn't play like he's under 6'3", which he is. He's one of the only guys in the top, like, 20 that are under 6'3 of the tight ends. And so that's going to cause you pause. But Irv Smith has the talent to be a first-round tight end. And if he was over 6'3", he probably would be a first-round tight end. But the fact that he's not is why you're getting the value of him as a player. I think he goes in the second round. I don't have any like specific names that I can say, hey, this guy under 6'1", you know, one in a certain situation. But when you watch his film, you can see that really he's able to play beyond his size. And so that's why I think he adds value in that second round. You know, if you want to talk about the fact that his overall athleticism was a little bit lower too, then you can start to say maybe he'll drop a little bit. But, I mean, he's got all the intangibles that he needs to find success in the NFL. So that I still think he ends up in that second round somewhere.
All right, Ryan Anton. I'm starting to think the Lions will target a guard at day two. I especially like Eric McCoy in round two. What other guards do you think would be good value and fit on day two?
My guard lists are Garrett Bradbury, Chris Lindstrom, and then McCoy comes in at third for me. Then I'd want to see Dalton Risner, who I think is a guard instead of a right tackle. Elgin Jenkins, Connor McGovern, Michael Dieter, Drew Samaria. Nate Davis is a really underrated sleeper that could go with the sneak in the back end of third round, maybe even be there at 114 or 111 whenever they pick in the fourth. Maybe even Ben Powers, the other Oklahoma guard, who could find his way in there as well. But if I'm picking in the second round, and let's assume Bradbury's not there, I'd be targeting Lindstrom or McCoy and hoping they're there. If it slides to the third, maybe McGovern or Dieter are there. But Nate Davis would definitely be on my list as well.
All right. Scott Marquand, knowing Bob Quinn's history of drafting a, quote, under-the-radar player in the early rounds, Galladay and Walker, do you have any players that fit into this trend?
I'm working on an article on this right now, but I just mentioned Nate Davis is a guy who is a small school guard who I could think could sneak into the third round. The other guy that I think could really surprise people is Josh Oliver from San Jose State. It's a move tight end. Not many people are talking about him, but his tape is really good. He's, again, in that kind of fringe third round, fourth, early fourth type border. For me, he's my fifth tight end behind Hockenson, Fant, Smith, Sternberger. Oliver is my fifth. He's a guy that I think not many people are aware of right now, but he has very good athleticism. He wins in a lot of ways that I think the Lions could utilize. And so he's a sleeper. Those are the two names I would be keeping an eye on.
All right. Next question from Tyler Davis. Tyree Jackson looks like a very solid quarterback prospect. Have the Lions shown any interest in him through the pre-draft process? Also, what range do you see Damian Harris being drafted? I would love to see the Lions take him in the third to complement Kerryon Johnson.
They met with Tyree Jackson at the Combine. So they have shown some interest in him. I think he is an early day three guy. I don't know if anybody would jump up and take him in the third, but he's in that range. As far as Damian Harris, I think I could see him going in the second or third. I don't think the Lions would take a running back in the third round based on their other needs. If he slid to the fourth, I think he's more in the conversation. But I think they might be looking to get more of a specialty type back that they can get later in day three rather than a guy who could be a workhorse like Damian Harris. Look, Damian Harris was my number one back coming into the season, and then Josh Jacobs knocked him off that pedestal, his teammate at Alabama. So that's where we're, the second and third round is, I think, probably where Harris ends up going.
Kyle Klein asks, what remaining need on the Lions is least likely to get filled in this draft?
Probably the interior defensive line, the fourth guy on that interior defensive line.
Greg O'Leary asks, any inklings that the Lions are looking for developmental nose tackle to train behind Damon Harrison?
I mentioned Rennell Wren in an article where, because Bob Quinn went to Arizona State's Pro Day, he's at Arizona State. 6'5", 318. He's got some good run-stopping capabilities. He's, again, in that kind of third, fourth-round range for me. If they want to get a guy a little bit later, Daylon Mack out of Texas A&M is almost exactly like Damon Harrison, where he could be an under-the-radar guy. 6'1", 336, so he's a little bit shorter, a little bit heavier. But he's got good movement skills, and he could be a guy who I think if he's sitting there in like the fifth round or something like that, definitely could be a target.
What draft prospects fit the Lions' Jack linebacker role within the quib?
That's a good one, and it's a ton. Like all the guys that we've mentioned at the top, Allen, Bosa, Burns, all those guys fit up at the top. But then it gets a little bit trickier, and they're nice. And as you get later into the draft, Ben Banigou from TCU fits into that role. You mentioned Van Ginkle, but then guys like Justin Hollis from Oregon, Sutton Smith from Northern Illinois, who might even be an off-the-ball guy, Jamal Davis from Akron, Malik Kearney from North Carolina. Both those guys are kind of defensive ends that could transition to that outside linebacker, maybe even off-the-ball linebacker type thing, role. Pass rushing specialist Malik Reed from Nevada is another guy who kind of fits into that. Those would be the names I'd keep an eye on.
Madwin Evans asks, is it worth keeping an eye on a prospect visits, or do so many go unnoticed it's folly to try to keep in track of who the Lions are meeting?
It's tough to keep track with who they're meeting with because it's the reports are few and far between. But I can tell you, of the 25 players that Quinn has drafted, we have known ahead of time that they have met with all but three. Okay, so 22 of the 25, we knew they met with ahead of time. So if you hear that they met with a guy, very possible that that they're on the list.
Ron Southwell asks, who might be the sleeper pick in any round that we are not focusing on? Ragnow was a well-kept secret.
You know, I kind of mentioned those right up or a bit earlier with Josh Oliver and Oliver the tight end and then, a couple other guys in there.
Between the numbers, ass, all three of Bob Quinn's first-round picks have been college team captains. Matt Patricia emphasizes needing to find passion and love for the game and players. With these qualities in mind, who are some of the matches in the first round and who may slip down the Lions board?
I haven't done a captain's list yet, so I don't have that answer. I do want to keep, I'll hold on to it and I'll try and find out who are some of the top guys. I'll check to see if they are captains or not, but I just haven't got to that point in evaluation.
Final question from Atlas. What does the city/team have to do to make itself more attractive for events such as the Super Bowl draft or combine? And is it likely to happen anytime soon? They got to improve the weather during the combine and the draft time.
That's the trick, right?
And the Super Bowl.
Well, and honestly, like, the facilities are being upgraded, and that helps. But the facilities are look, teams get to host these things when they build brand new stadiums.
And that's why they got the host back in 05.
Yeah, right? And so if you don't have an attractive venue and the weather's bad, then that's going to be a problem.
Knocks you down the list, even if you might have a fun town with a lot of hotel rooms.
Look, and I think there's an opportunity for it to happen here, but I think there's so many people, you know, competing for right now.
In line ahead of them.
Yeah, they're probably a little bit further down the list. So I don't see it happening anytime soon, but I do know that Rod Wood is continuing to try and make it happen.
Especially with the team moving to Las Vegas and the LA teams and the Las Vegas team opening new stadiums.
Yeah, there's all kinds of...
in the Southwest.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. We made it. So what are your... what do we got shout-out-wise?
So our... Our review count stayed the same, but we got some, or our ratings stayed the same, but we got some reviews, so that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. The most recent one is from Die Hard Lion. He wrote a nice review. He actually said he wrote it like 8 months ago and didn't realize he didn't submit it. So
no, I'll take the delay.
So now he gets it out for us, and that was pretty cool. Nice to see that. And then I met Nick Shaw at training camp this past year. Nick doesn't listen via iTunes, so he said he wanted to leave a review, but he couldn't. So he gave us some nice words out on Twitter and said some nice things. So I thought I'd give Nick some love here as well because
that's great.
He's a good guy. And like I said, he's not able to leave a review if you don't use iTunes. So we get it. We get that people aren't able to do that.
Yeah.
We know that. And when you reach out, you know, we still appreciate that.
Yeah, we really appreciate everybody lending us their ears.
For sure.
So next week, probably another slow week again, so you're probably going to have more of the same. So send in your draft questions.
I think I want to start doing the quib stuff. I think we're at we've got enough pro day, we can start probably doing quib stuff.
And you'll probably have to define the quib a little bit more now that we have a few listeners that might not know of your patented quib system.
And the system itself is developing itself a little bit more too, so even better.
So that's what we'll discuss next week, and until that time, let's go Lions.